Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino getting you ready for a fee drop bonus episode of RHAP, an exclusive from our patron-only podcast feed. I like to do this from time to time to let people see a little bit of what is going on in our patron podcast feed. What you're about to hear in this episode is our weekly top 40 feedback show from the all-time season rankings countdown, where every week we get to some of the questions, some weeks more than others, of the Survivor questions that come in for our all-time top 40 season rankings. And this week we talked about Survivor Blood versus Water with Mary Kwiatkowski and AJ Norris. And so this week we will have our patron-only feedback show, where I will continue to answer the feedback questions that came in. And on today's panel, we're going to hear from the great Sarah Ferguson, and Lancelot Draper will be joining us for this episode of the podcast. And we do this every single week in our patron-only podcast feed, one of the many shows that we have added to our patron-only podcast feed, including the Patron 5 for 5. And for the Big Brother season, we have two shows coming to the patron-only podcast feed. We have The Slop and a weekly call-in show that we're going to do with Taryn Armstrong every Friday to talk about what's happening in the Big Brother house. So if you're not part of our patron community, now is an incredible time to consider becoming a patron. It's the start of the Big Brother season, and it's the start of a brand new month, which means that you can try it out for the entire month, and you can cancel anytime. Plus, in addition to all of the content, you get access to the patron community in our Facebook group and our Discord, plus many other great benefits that you will find when you become a patron at robhasawebsite.com/patron. That's robhasawebsite.com/patron. So without further ado, enjoy this bonus episode of Rob as a Podcast. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here on the Patron Feedback Show. I'm trying to reach the bell, but I have a cup of coffee in the way. Oh, you know, I moved it. I'm so sorry. I have no bell. I'm naked without the bell. All right, we'll go without it here. There you go. All right, welcome aboard, everybody, for the Patron Feedback Show for Survivor Blood versus Water. We only talked about Survivor Blood versus Water. It was, I believe, on Wednesday night. I'm losing track of the days. But there was a very fun panel with AJ Norris and Frail Mary, Mary Kwiatkowski. And boy, we've got a great patron feedback show for you here today to continue our discussion of Survivor Blood versus Water. If there was anything we missed, anything else you, the listeners, wanted us to get into. And we will explore all that today here with a man who I met in person at the same time that we were all together with Tyson Apostle at RehabCon. Here is the great Lancelot Draper is here. Lancelot, how are you?
Ding. Good. I think you could say, in order to answer your question of how am I think you could say I'm sufficiently influenced. The man of the hour, Tyson Apostle, the person who won this season, has had an impact on me. Well, I suppose you could say influence on me as the world's foremost pickleball influencer.
Yes. Are you playing pickleball now?
Way too much. Way too much pickleball.
Yes. Okay. It's everywhere. Everybody's getting into the pickleball. Lancelot, besides pickleball, how's everything else going?
Very good. I've been really enjoying this. I know that the very hot weather this season has been deadly in many cases, but I've been very much enjoying it, mostly because I feel like this summer has been a really nice, I guess, breath of fresh air, considering the summer spent mostly indoors last year. So all around, seems like people are happy and in a good mood.
Putting a real positive spin on everything, Lancelot.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about how hot this season of Survivor was in the Philippines, because you talked about on the show with AJ Norris and Sarah that this season was not difficult in terms of the weather, and it really wasn't. It was very hot, but I'll take the heat over the rain any day. And personally, for me, I think that's one of the things that made this season so enjoyable, is simply the fact that I didn't have to watch a bunch of people sit under a shelter with wrinkly skin and miserable.
Yeah, there's really no upside of bad weather on Survivor. I mean, I guess you could say like, oh, that was dramatic, but it really doesn't make anything that's conducive to exciting television or gameplay. So you get a season with great weather, and you get a season with some fun gameplay. Of course, very excited to have back with us on the podcast. Always a treat when we check in with the co-host of the Shite 90s Shows Taught Me. Here is Sarah Ferguson. Sarah, how are you?
Rob, I have here my notes for this podcast. I don't want to have an advantage for the feedback show, so I figured I would just throw it in the fire.
Throw them in the fire. Put them
it's
in the
going.
Fire.
Yeah. It's going. But yeah, like you had my loved one on the pod last week, mm-hmm. so it's only fair that I'm here this week covering Blood versus Water, and I'm very excited.
Okay. All right. Great to have you here on board. We got a lot of questions to get into here from our patrons, so looking forward to getting into all of this stuff. Let me just start off. Let me get the... Sarah, why Blood versus Water?
So
you had an open invitation. You could have been here any week. Why this week?
So first and foremost, back in 2013, when this podcast, this show aired, I think that I started listening to RHAP sometime in 2013. So it was either Fan versus Favorites or Philippines, mm-hmm. but I was fully like immersed in RHAP by the time Blood versus Water came around. So this was like, I remember so many of our inside jokes from back in the day. And I feel like this was like kind of got me in love. I was already in love with Survivor, but it definitely got me in love with like RHAP and the whole community. And then aside from that, I am very much a person that enjoys like family dynamics. I liked seeing, this is probably my favorite version of a like half fans, half yep. favorites type of season, because it's like typically we don't care about the new people, but it's their families. So you already care, like your favorites, like significant other or daughter or, you know, whatever is there. So I feel as though for a modern season of Survivor, we get to know these players much more than we normally would,
yeah.
which I liked.
It is wild that this season does come back to back with another half and half season in Survivor Karamo, and that we heard much earlier in the top 40 countdown. Lancelot, I know you are certainly a big Tyson fan. Any other reason why Blood versus Water stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I did mention the weather, which I think, you know, I think some people would maybe say, oh, yeah, that's kind of nice that we didn't have to deal with watching people suffer in the rain. But for me, that wasn't just a small perk of the season. That was like a major driving factor in the overall mood of the season. This was generally not like a nasty, terrible season. This was an enjoyable, funny, happy, just kind of like a, I guess, a mood boosting type show, kind of like a feel good show you could go watch, you know, if you're ever not feeling great and you want to just go watch some Survivor Blood versus Water. I feel like you might have a good mood boost from it. Mm-hmm. But I also, like, I'm a big fan of Tyson, just like almost any fan of Survivor is. But I feel like I find him more relatable than most players, because I really like a lot of the players, but I have a hard time feeling like I relate to them. But Tyson comes from the same state I do, has somewhat of a similar upbringing. I don't relate to him necessarily. I'm not trying to claim that I have a similar personality or demeanor or that I'm even remotely as charismatic, but I feel like I can relate to him a little bit more than a lot of people just based on our upbringings. Mm-hmm. And for me, that I think that was maybe one of the first things that made me want to learn more about Tyson on Survivor and be a big fan of him like I ended up being.
Okay. All right. Thank you for all that. Let's talk about the panel from Wednesday night. And I felt very bad after the panel was over that we were very close to breaking the record on Wednesday night. Mary had said we're so close. I didn't realize that we were on the verge of a record-setting podcast on Blood versus Water. So we covered a lot of ground. We did at the end, like, oh my God, we're so far behind. We did speed things up. Sarah, did we miss anything?
I think that going off of the Tyson talk, I feel like one of the things that we didn't cover on Wednesday was the evolution of Tyson, in the sense of we got to see a more vulnerable and sensitive side of Tyson. And I think with the AARP of it all, like the mom's club, I think that Tyson had to show his vulnerable side to ultimately win with this jury. If he was his fun, loving, silly Tyson self, I don't think that they would have loved that from him. So I think like him getting emotional about Rachel and the fact that he made that sacrifice. Mm-hmm. He could have given up his spot to Rachel, but he chose not to. And then he said that I have to prove myself to make it to the end. So it wasn't a selfish move. And the fact that like Rachel was his driving force, his motivation, his inspiration. I think this is a much softer side of Tyson that we had seen previously. And we saw more of that in Winners at War.
Yeah, that's interesting, you know, because it feels like it serves him well here in Survivor Blood versus Water. But I guess when he comes back, you know, he's a dad, he's married, he has two kids by the time he plays in Winners at War. But Lancelot, I almost feel like it's almost not as effective because like everybody's a parent.
Yeah, but I also think that Tyson is looking at the game now as something that has provided a legitimate change of life for him now that he's been able to win, because he talks about specifically in a very emotional confessional about how the winning Survivor in 27 has made it so that he can spend time with his children. Yeah. And that's had a tremendous impact on him because that makes him so happy. And so I think that his second two seasons, Blood versus Water and Winners at War, he looks at the stakes that he's playing for, and I think he does a much better job of acknowledging just how high the stakes are. Whereas in his first two seasons, I think he was happy with just having as much fun as possible, and whatever the result is, that's the result. And so it is cool to see his evolution and understanding how not only is it important for him to do the best he can to go as far as he can in the game, but by doing so, it's provided him the type of life that a lot of people would love to have, from winning $1 million and everything that comes with it.
Lancelot, from your notes from talking about this season, what do you feel like that we didn't get to?
I suppose the main things, I don't know, you got to a lot. I mean, you almost broke the record, right?
Almost.
So I suppose the things maybe, if I had to guess, it would probably be, maybe you didn't talk a whole lot about the main things that Tyson did wrong in his first two seasons that he did a good job of fixing in this third season to ultimately give him a very, very, very dominant win in which he has very few missteps.
Hit me, Lancelot.
Well, I think the first thing would be back in Token Chains, he was rather nasty to Sierra.
Sure.
And I feel like he only had a couple small, much less nasty moments in season 27. There was the Katie thing where he told her where her chair was. Mm-hmm. And we're talking just a few minor errors compared to the outright bullying in Token Chains. So I would say that's probably one of his most major improvements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you want more?
Sure. If you have them.
I think there's the very obvious misstep in Heroes versus Villains, where he switched his vote to Parvati, where a lot of people want to give Russell credit for that being a very good move, but I don't think that's the case at all. I think that was much less a very good move on Russell's part. It was more just like a huge shot in the dark for him. And it was much more so a very bad move on Tyson's end, because we saw exactly what happened, where he essentially voted himself out. And I think that the reason he did that, obviously, was because he felt like he needed to take some kind of gamble. He felt like he needed, and it probably came with maybe some insecurity in his alliance, maybe just a little bit. Whereas in Blood versus Water, he they're really the only major gamble he takes is drawing rocks. And even when he does so, he's a 66% favorite. Mm-hmm. So I think he was much more calculated in his third season.
Okay. Sarah?
Yeah. I mean, he said himself that he didn't, you know, strategize day to night in his first two seasons, but for his third season, he would stay up all night just thinking and strategizing. And that's something that he wasn't really doing. And he had so much more energy than everybody else in the season between like keeping himself fed. He said that he didn't go like a day hungry on this season between like the coconut bandit stuff and, you know, being on rewards and like sneaking food when he could. And when they swapped tribes, just like, I loved that whole scene when they swap tribes and Caleb and Hayden are like, it's like somebody comes into your house and goes right into your fridge and just steals all of your food. It's like, they're like, I didn't want to share with him, but he just took it. Mm-hmm. And he said so himself. He was like, you know, but he was like, yeah, I'm just like coming here and like, you know, stealing all your food, eating it all. And it's like, how can you be mad at Tyson? Because he's just so funny. He's so fun. And it's like, he's just Tyson. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, Sarah, I liked what he said during those scenes when they were just like raiding the original Tadhana tribe's food, where he said, if you don't act like you're doing anything wrong, like this is just like natural. You just walk in like you're Sarah Ferguson, just like going through somebody's drawers. Like if you don't act like you're doing anything wrong, then nobody says anything.
Are you a guest at somebody's house if you don't get to raid their snack drawer? I don't think so. The sun chips are up to grabs for everybody.
Would you do that, Sarah? Would you just open the cabinet and then just like, ooh.
I'd be like, hey, look at these, like, look at the smart pop. I love a snick snack patty whack. Like, let's go.
Yeah, I feel like 99% of homeowners say, make yourself at home. And 99% of guests do not take that invitation.
Yeah. Yes.
But Tyson clearly went above and beyond to make sure I don't know that he was ever even invited in the first place, but he invited himself.
Yeah. So. He came right in. Okay.
And he made Aris the enemy, and that's all he needed to do.
I loved that,
the target
too.
On Aris's back.
Yeah, that was a hilarious, hilarious part. He was like, oh, Aris, like, he always does this. Don't mind Aris. Like, he always bosses us around. Great move by Tyson. Tyson, ultimately, what he did right is that he had a perfect mix of strategy and his, like, old Tyson, like, jesty self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's the king of jest.
King of jest. Yeah. Lancelot, do you feel like that Tyson needed like an Aris type figure to run behind in Survivor Winners at War?
Probably yes, but I would say that there were plenty of men out there who he could have chosen. So I would say that the answer certainly is yes. And there was plenty of opportunity for it. And maybe that was the case. Maybe he did, but it just didn't make the edit. But I would certainly think so.
I just feel like in the group, and not to do the Winners at War feedback show today, but I feel like in the group that he was with, he was, you know, aligned with Kim and with Amber. And like, I think that they looked like, okay, that like that's Tyson's group or Tyson and Kim. And it wasn't like that you had somebody who was Aris who was really like, all right, everybody, here's what's going on. And Tyson sort of like is like the vice president, just sort of like giving like jokes and stuff like that. And they sort of looked at he was like somebody who was like a very big threat that was there.
Yeah. And Tyson was 150 to 200%. Sorry, I just got finished watching Thailand.
Yes.
Very aware of the fact that he was an enormous threat. I mean, and he had that confirmed afterward, in which Randy did the polls of not the poll, but the draft for the fantasy draft for the players on Winners of War, where Tyson was the by far and away the number one most chosen person. And that obviously was after the season had already filmed. But going into the season, Tyson was there, not a shred of doubt that he was extremely aware that he was easily top, probably top three biggest threats that people would want to be targeting and would not want to take into the merge. Probably up there with Tony, Boston Rob, Sandra. But certainly, I would say top three.
Okay. We've talked so much about Tyson. Let's talk about some other subjects from Survivor, Blood versus Water. Sarah, any other subject that you want to jump into to start answering some of these feedback questions?
Let's have a think. I think let's start maybe from the, maybe even the pre-show. I feel like a lot of what we did not see made a, you know, put like a thumb on the pulse of what happened this season.
You mean pre-game alliances.
Pre-game alliances and even like RC and her father.
Yes. Okay.
Like how that would have impacted everything.
Yeah.
And if they were involved in any preseason alliances.
I mean, so I can't say with any certainty if RC was involved in any pregame alliances. What I can say is that RC was involved in the Miss Survivor competition, and she was so micromanaging about the entire Miss Survivor competition campaign that I cannot imagine she would not have been thoroughly pre-gaming on the season.
Yes. Was that the year that Parvati or Andrea won?
No, that's the year that RC won.
Oh, RC won, of course.
She beat Kim Spradlin.
What? Yeah.
She had a very thorough campaign.
Right. Okay. So we were high campaigning. So we can only imagine that RC was in the DMs, or I don't know if there were DMs back then.
There were Twitter DMs.
There were DMs.
Yeah.
In the DMs. Like, hey.
And I think that the person that she was probably pre-gaming with the most, my guess would be Colton.
Yeah, Colton was very well insulated in this game, surprisingly so, right? In the beginning, it's not like they saw him and like kicked him out.
He didn't get voted out in the first vote, which you would have thought that he would have been. Did he even get any votes in that first like turn over your card?
No.
I don't think so.
Rob, do you think that the reason Colton was most likely pre-gaming with RC is based on personality or based on how poorly Colton felt set up from the beginning of the game? Like, what are you using to determine why you think that that was most likely her biggest pregame alliance?
Well, I think that a lot of times that when players come through Survivor and like to me, Survivor is like a high school, like, and I'm a teacher there. And then, like, these kids, like, we get a new, like, group of kids coming through. And then, you know, when you have back-to-back seasons, like you have with season 24 and season 25, there's a lot of, like, commingling between the seasons. And Colton was, like, very, like, social and, like, chatty on social media with, like, a lot of the players, especially from Survivor Philippines. I think originally Survivor might have wanted to bring Colton back for Survivor Philippines. So I do feel like that there's like some overlap between Colton and RC. And so they both seem to me like the type of players that would be pre-gaming a lot. I know Aris was doing a lot of pre-game talk, and I'm not sure if he had connected with Colton in any way. Ironically, I think that Tyson actually did some of the least amount of pre-gaming on this season.
That's
and then I think that the way that Colton was extremely insecure about his standing in the game from day one probably confirms what you're saying, that he maybe felt like a devastating blow of his ride or die not making the season. And just basically went into panic mode.
Yeah, and I don't want to say ride or die. Like some complete speculation on my part, but I just feel like that. I think that Colton was talking with people, and just based on my involvement with RC in Miss Survivor, where she was calling me, you know, multiple times a day, like yelling at me about things. So I think that she was the type of person who I think would have not have let an opportunity to pregame slip.
Yeah. RC giving that like alpha energy.
So I think that she would have been somebody who would have been chatting a lot. Of course, you know, famously Candace and John come in at the last second, and there's a lot of like, yeah, we don't, but we don't even know you. Candace gets knocked out there. But, you know, as far as how would RC have done on the season? I don't feel
she would
like
have been balls to the wall from day one.
Yeah, she would have played hard, certainly. Yeah. But
and I don't think she would have lasted long as a result.
I mean, it does seem like that the power structure of original Galang ran through mostly the guys in, you know, Aris, Jervis, and Tyson, and maybe, you know, Tina also by way of Aris. So I don't think necessarily that RC is really going to, you know, fit in with that dynamic. She does not seem like somebody who's going to like fit in like the Zen tribe.
Yeah. I mean, I think that she probably would have had a better time with the younger crowd over on Tadhana, but so who really knows?
Yeah. So,
yeah, she actually might have done really well if first, like, let's say her father gets voted out first in the twist, and then she takes his spot and ends up on the cast of all new players. She may have actually done pretty well because she may not have felt the need to go balls to the wall and might have been seen as kind of a leader. And it might have worked out really well for her if that happened. But we could speculate on a million things.
Yeah. I mean, interesting. All right. Well, let's talk about the person who did go home in that first vote, and that would be Candace. Josh G says, on a scale of one to Jonathan and Wanda, how screwed was Candace? Lancelot, do you think that this was a screw job for Candace?
Absolutely. First of all, I'm a massive, I have Billy Garcia levels of crushes on Candace, right? So I felt screwed personally as well. Yes, she got immensely screwed. This is a twist that has happened way too many times on Survivor because the amount of times it should have ever happened is zero. So that's all I can say is absolutely mega screwed.
Yeah, I feel the same way, especially with the mumblings of pre-season alliances or discussions. Although I did like the opportunity of getting to know John more. I thought that he was an interesting character. I know he made like mistakes, but he was also like fun to watch. I also like John and Candace's like second honeymoon when they're both on Redemption Island.
I like that
like,
too.
Lucky them. That they just get to hang out on their own, do some fishing, have a little tan. So, like, Candace did get screwed, and she was pissed. But then again, if we did not have Candace on Redemption Island, we wouldn't have so many, like, fun, fiery moments from her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and I feel like that incredulous Candace is the best Candace, where she's annoyed about stuff and angry. I feel like it's always a good television to see her really be very annoyed with things. I think she's a good character. And I feel like that, I know this is like her shortest stint, but I feel like that this might be her, you know, most, for a hero, her most heroic stint on the show.
Sure. I really enjoyed Candace on Redemption Island, and she did a great job as well because she won like, I don't know, four or five like of the competitions. So I felt like her place was like her home was Redemption Island almost.
So Ben in the chat has a comment that's an interesting one, one I hadn't heard before. Ben says, I read online that Blood versus Water was actually supposed to be blood couples versus water, dating slash relationship couples. After RC and her dad backed out and Candace and her husband made it, they had to go with returnees versus new players because the numbers were unbalanced. Apparently, this was going to happen as well for San Juan del Sur, but So and her sister hopped out. So not sure if this is true, but the number of pairs match up with the story. Well, does it? Because I feel like... because if you have so we have five pairs of two, and so it would have been a tribe of what? I guess it just seems weird to say that a married couple and like dating couple, like there's a difference between people that are related to each other. Like, I kind of feel like a husband and wife are going to be closer than, say, like a brother and sister are going to be. So I'm not sure necessarily, like, and to say that, like, a couple like Kat and Hayden are on the same level as, not to say that Kat can't get on Hayden's level. I'm saying that they're, like, to say they're on the same level as, like, Brad and Monica, who've been together for a lifetime. It feels weird to, you know, to have that. But just to talk it through, the exercise, I guess, would have been then, so it would have been a tribe of, what, Tyson and Rachel, Brad and Monica, Rupert and Laura, Hayden and Kat, and then also the other...
Colton and Caleb?
Colton and Caleb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Five.
Okay. And then, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, blood versus water
checks out.
Would have made more sense.
Versus blood or something like that, basically?
Yeah.
Like blood would be family. It'd be couples versus blood.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so as like a junior detective, I feel like this is checking out, but I'm not going to put all my eggs in the basket. And I don't think that like it would have necessarily made a better season if we went this route.
I mean, if you were going to do that idea for a season, like it shouldn't be like dating couples. It should be, okay, you have like five pairs of people that are related and five pairs of people that are best friends. So it's like, well, who's closer? Yeah. Like your best friend that you found, like if it's like, okay, it's Sarah Ferguson and Jess Sterling, or is it somebody, it's like, me and my brother are on there. It's like, well, they're your blood. Like what's the tighter bond of people that are like siblings or best friends?
Yeah, I have thought about a best friend blood versus water type of show before as well. So I would love to see that. Mm-hmm. I really do love this theme. I don't know like if that's a hot take or anything, but I would like to see it again.
Yeah. Ben adds that Colton mentioned before that the production told him he was going to be on the tribe with Caleb too. Who knows though? So that might be Yeah.
That's delusional, Colton. Like, you know that there's no way that you're, going to be on the same tribe as Caleb. Like, it's,
well, if
like,
they would have done that, if they would have told them that that's what the twist was and that he would definitely be out there with Caleb.
It would have told Colton anything, but you got to be realistic. That makes no freaking sense.
Mm-hmm.
Go on Big Brother where you can stay in a house.
I don't think Survivor would, because we would have an imbalance of men versus women, right? And I don't think Survivor would have wanted to do that, because when's the last time?
They did do that in the second Blood versus Water, where they had 10 men and only 8 women in that season. So it's not like it never happens. But I think
each tribe had 5 men and 4 women, though, right? Mm-hmm. So it was still equal in terms of tribe versus tribe. Whereas the couples thing, because Colton and Caleb were a couple, if you did couples versus family, then you would have had too many men on the other tribe, wouldn't you?
I don't know. My brain is hurting.
It's hard to think of on the spot. I would need to draw this out.
Four is less than two. Five equals nine. Yeah.
Let me ask you both about Tina, who I think came under some scrutiny for her gameplay in the season, in the panel the other night. So Tim L says, why do we never talk about how Tina was so close to being a two-time winner? She was arguably closer to a second win besides anybody other than Tony, Sandra, or Natalie. Sorry, I think Michelle Fitzgerald would like a word with you, sir. What is her reputation if she wins?
Okay, so I agree that she is closer to being a two-time winner than a lot of other players, but I don't know if I can agree that she was super close to actually winning this season. I don't think that Tina would have done as well at the final tribal council as people think she would have. I don't think that a lot of people had... I don't know that she had a ton of enemies, but I don't know that a lot of people had a lot of respect for her gameplay. I feel like they were mostly neutral on Tina. So I'm not convinced that she does well in a tribal council against Tyson. I'm not convinced that she would win against somebody like Hayden. I think that Tina is going to face a lot of obstacles in the majority of combinations of final tribal councils that she finds herself.
Well, let's just talk that through for a minute, because, okay, so let's say Tina wins the final four immunity challenge, which she really did not have a great chance in that obstacle course that it turned out to be. So hypothetically, she wins. You would think that, where's she going to put her votes? She's going to put her votes against Tyson, and then I guess can she get Monica to also vote with her against it. I mean, I feel like Monica's got to vote for either Jervis or Tyson at that point. She might as well. And so then I think then Tyson and Jervis are probably going to vote together, I think, unless Jervis is like, hey, this is my shot to get rid of Tyson. Might not be a bad move for Jervis. But I think the guys stick together. And then we end up in a fire making of Tyson versus Monica. Does that sound right?
Yeah, and I also think that based on the way Tina talked to Monica after getting back from Redemption Island, she may not have ever been able to convince Monica to try to get Tyson out because she was not nice to Monica. She was so like, "Hey, that maybe everybody hates you."
Tyson gets Monica to vote against Jervis?
Assuming Tina wins the immunity, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Tyson would want Jervis out. If he has to choose between Monica and Jervis.
Yeah, he would want Monica there for Tyson.
What would happen there? And then just hypothetically, if we ended up with Tina and Tyson in the final two, let's just like leave Jervis or Monica out of it because I don't think either of them, like Jervis didn't get any votes in the real one, and then Monica only got a vote from spite vote from Vetus. I mean, I do feel strongly that Tina has the Aris, Vetus, Katie block down. So that's three.
And I think that's all she gets. I think Tyson wins 5-3.
Laura M? They were very close. They were pretty close, especially on Redemption Island.
Do we have a first tie?
So that could have went. I don't know if I'm sold on Aris giving his vote to Tina. Like, although he was very close to Tina, like, I think Aris still respects game, maybe.
Yeah.
Vetus is spiteful. Like, we know that. But I think that Tyson would still win, but it would be closer than ultimately what we ended up with.
Yeah. Okay. Did you have either of you have thoughts on Tina from rewatching the season?
I thought that Tina had some like fun moments, but I just thought that, I mean, I thought that she was fine. I think that they did a better job with telling the story of a mother-daughter relationship with Laura and Sierra. So I think that that kind of like overshadowed Tina's relationship on the show with Katie. But I thought that I think her funnest moment was her like winning the second Redemption Island like buyback, and then her like running all over the island, having more energy than Sierra, trying to find the idol. Aside from that, like I can't really think of any moments where I was just like, oh gosh, like I love Tina. Like Tina was definitely on the bottom this season. So I can't think of any other amazing moments.
Just a quick break to thank our sponsors for this episode of the podcast. Of course, this is a feed drop from one of our patron episodes. Did I mention that the patrons got this episode of the podcast without any commercials in their podcast feed the other day? Well, that's the kind of benefits that the patrons are getting. But for you, a quick word from our sponsors. And I want to take a moment and thank our friends over at KiwiCo. KiwiCo is an incredible company because they are creating projects that you can work on for the special children in your life. We all know that our childhood experiences can have a major impact on the direction of our lives. That I can recall playing with a tape recorder from when I was at a very young age. I got to do a few different things in school. I got to do the school announcements and things like that, pushed me in this direction of eventually spending all of my time talking for hours and hours and hours on end. Why not ensure that the children in your life get pushed towards some educational projects and make an investment in their childhood education? Why not gift your young innovators super cool STEAM projects to nurture their curiosity and exploration outside the classroom? With a KiwiCo subscription, your child gets a new crate of fun, science, and art projects every single month. for trailblazing toddlers to more experienced explorers in every stage in between. My boys, Dominic and Anthony, they love it when a KiwiCo crate shows up, especially Dominic now that he's old enough to read the directions himself, that we'd like to try to help him. And he's like, no, I got this. He wants to work on it all of himself. They put together solar systems, all sorts of experiments, claws to pick things up off of the ground, that they love playing with it. And Anthony, who's five, he's built a farm with all different animals. They love working on the KiwiCo projects. It's hard to find creative ways to keep kids busy and screen free, and KiwiCo is one of the few things that I have found that does that. KiwiCo does the legwork for you so you can spend more time tackling quality projects together. Everything your child needs for their project is included in the crate, so they can get started right away. Crates include one or two larger projects, or even two or three smaller projects tied together by an engaging theme. Cultivate your child's natural creativity and curiosity with new hands-on projects every month. They'll explore new worlds and rediscover familiar ones without leaving home. Everything is shipped right to your door. There's no commitment. You can pause or cancel anytime. With KiwiCo, there's something for every kid or kid at heart every month. Get your first month free on select crates at kiwico.com/RHAP. That's kiwico.com/RHAP. And before we get back, I want to also take a moment to thank our sponsors at BetterHelp Online Therapy. As we're beginning to see the light at the end of this COVID tunnel, a lot of people are still feeling down and emotionally out of sorts. You may not feel depressed or at a total loss, but if you're feeling a bit off or your relationships are suffering, this could be a sign that you should talk to somebody. If you're feeling anxious, or if you're struggling in your career, if you're having trouble sleeping, online therapy can help. Visit betterhelp.com/RHAP and fill out a questionnaire to help BetterHelp assess your needs and match you with a professional licensed therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours via secure weekly video, phone, or even live chat sessions with your therapist. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great matches, so it's easy and free to change counselors if you need a better fit. Online therapy is convenient and more affordable than in-person therapy. Our listeners get 10% off their first month of online therapy at betterhelp.com/RHAP. That's betterhelp.com/RHAP. Here's a question about that rock draw at the final six. Whose move is the final six rock draw, Sierra or Hayden? This is from Dalton.
It's a great question. I think that, so Sierra came up with it and she pushed it, but Hayden made the ultimate decision. Is that what we're saying?
I think it's the opposite. I think it's like it's Hayden's idea, but Sierra pulls the trigger.
Yeah.
Because Hayden is like saying, like, you got to come with us, you got to come with us. And she's like, no, no, no. And then it's not until she sort of sees a tribal council that she agrees to go along with it.
Okay. So then for me, in my opinion, it's Sierra. She's the one that pulled the trigger. It could be, I'm sure she was thinking about it anyway. I'm sure it wasn't like Hayden brought it up and she's like, I never thought about that before. In my opinion, Sierra was a pretty good player. This season. And she was very strategic. What do you think, Lancelot?
Well, the interesting thing here is if I'm sitting there at a final six and I've got some guy who is a very big threat to win this game telling me over and over, you need to make a big move so that the jury can see, I would be like, yeah, but they're seeing you tell me. So like, why would they ever even give me credit for this in the first place? So I would feel like I would just want to make the decision that's going to give me the best chance of winning instead of what's going to give me the best chance of a huge move in front of the jury, because I've got somebody who's basically taking credit for it by being the guy who's telling me I should do it. I would just feel like it's the same thing when you're like, you're 5 minutes away from trying to go clean your room and your mom says, hey, when are you going to clean your room? And you're like, well, now I'm not going to clean it because you're just going to think I did it because you told me to. So yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, so you're saying that if Hayden was such a good salesperson that she would have been in on doing it before she gets to the tribal council where Jervis has to call her number four.
I just think that this made Hayden look way better. This did more for Hayden than it did for Sierra.
Yeah, I think that that's probably right. Sierra, I feel like misfires more at the previous vote where she sort of like digs herself a hole by going with the returning players. Like, that was the wrong call, right? To go with Tyson, Jervis, and Monica, whereas she probably has a better, much better shot to win if she ends up going with Hayden and Caleb and Katie.
Yeah, well, what's so nice is that Tyson doesn't play his idol, and Sierra has a 33% chance of Tyson going out, which is is so good for her chances if that happens. And she's not going to have another chance for that because Tyson's playing his idol at 5.
Well, he does play. So I'm talking about at the final 7. It seems like that she makes a more like I think her game is almost over by her voting with the veterans as opposed to the new players against Caleb. Sarah, was that actually a bad mistake?
I think that she definitely had a better chance with Caleb, Katie, and Hayden. However,
Tyson will play his idol at the tribal council, so they could not get Tyson out if that's what they tried to do.
Right. So I think that, and this is the vote that Caleb goes out ultimately. Yes. Yeah. So, I think that it would have been a good move for her, but at that time, I think that it was still like up in the air on like who can come back from redemption. Like, I'm sure that she was afraid of, because was her mom in redemption at that point?
Mm-hmm.
So she probably didn't want Tyson in redemption to win over her mom.
Yeah.
That was probably scarier for her than if Caleb went to redemption, because Laura was really, really great at redemption, but Tyson would have been probably even better. I think that there's no doubt that Tyson would have came back from redemption if he went.
Yeah. Mel Warrington also says, I don't think she would have gotten the jury votes. You know, I do think that what's interesting about what she was trying to do of like, oh, I'm going to work with Tyson and Jervis because they're running things. I don't know how much Survivor Sierra Easton had watched beforehand, but I bet she watched Survivor Samoa. And if you were going to watch any season of Survivor, I feel like the takeaway is, oh, okay, the guy that everybody's getting mad at, you just go to the end and you sit next to him and then you get the votes because everybody on the jury is mad at the guys that were pissing everybody off all season, and that's how you win. And so I think that maybe she might have thought that, like, okay, this is what I need to do. Go with Tyson and Jervis. Everybody's mad at them.
Yes, but not on returning season where people typically respect game and are typically less bitter.
Yeah.
I also think that people were probably at most 10% as mad towards Jervis and Tyson as they were towards Russell.
Yes.
So there's a huge fundamental difference there.
Well, I'm just trying to come up with some theories as to why she might have wanted to go in that direction, because that might have been they might have watched Survivor Samoa over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Sierra, pay attention. Look, this is what happens.
But to Sierra's credit, regardless of, like, let's say she only watched one or two seasons of Survivor. To her credit, I feel like she's an incredibly fast learner and picked up on the game and the strategy very quickly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And she was very good at adapting and learning the game while she was playing it. So I think she deserves a lot of credit, at least for that.
Yeah.
And not for nothing. Like, Tyson was like working Sierra really hard earlier. You know, we're still on board with each other. We're still good. And like, I'm sure that Tyson is very persuasive. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that the worst thing that happened to Sierra was at the finale when Jeff says, and that's how you play the game. And I thought that he really put her over in a way that I think made her an even bigger threat than she might have been. Sarah, do you think that that had an impact on how people viewed her?
For Cambodia?
Yes.
Or,
yes.
I think so. I think that the hype up of like, she made such a big move, like, you know, voting out your mom is so like savage. Like how can one done it? If she votes out her mom, she's like not loyal to anybody. But so I think that it definitely puts like a bigger target on her than if she was just like quiet Sierra, who made like a couple of like interesting strategic moves and who was more of a social player in her season. I think so. I guess the question is voting out her mom overrated?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, certainly, right?
Yeah. I would say that most super fans would agree that it's overrated. I think maybe some of the more casual people who have maybe only watched each season once and maybe don't listen to any kind of strategy podcast would maybe not say it's overrated.
Mm-hmm. For me, I would say like we like have the season of Blood versus Water to see somebody turn on their blood or their water. Yep. So I think the fact that we got that like satisfaction of seeing somebody vote out their mom is exciting. The sad thing is that she like told her mom that that's probably what she's going to have to do.
Yeah.
If it was a blind side, I'd be like living for it. I'm like, yeah, girl, right. Vote out your mom, like make her cry. Like just cause it's good TV.
Right. It wasn't like she came up with the plan. My mom will never see it coming. Tonight's the yeah. night, everybody. We take out my mom. She's standing in my way of this money. And
I remember when my mom didn't let me go on a date in 11th grade. I'll get her back for this now.
Yeah. Your time's up tonight, mom. Yeah. So
let's say she dramatic. Doesn't vote out her mom and she manages to get to the end with her mom. How does the voting even work? Like, is there a scenario where people are like, how do I choose between Sierra and Laura? I'll just vote for the third person and then neither of them win?
Well, we talked about that more in Survivor San Juan del Sur when Missy and Baylor are both in the final five. And I was asking about for Natalie, why did she want to get rid of Baylor in that spot? Wouldn't that be ideal to sit in the final three with Missy and Baylor? Because any votes that they get might end up splitting up. I do feel like that Sierra had a better shot than Laura to win the jury votes. But I do think that third person, that we see that a lot, like going back to like Survivor Philippines and like Survivor Heroes versus Villains, where there's two people that are together and there's one person who's not in that twosome, and that person can sometimes end up racking up the votes.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. How about from, let's talk about the theme. All right. Will we ever get another Blood vs. Water season, given that so many all-stars said they only returned with a loved one, like Vesepia, for example? Will we ever go back to a Blood vs. Water? We talked about this in our San Juan del Sur discussion, and we thought that they should. Do either of you think that another Blood vs. Water season is on the horizon? I don't say on the horizon like it's coming up soon, but will we ever get one again?
I personally would love to see it. I love any kind of family aspect of the game. I love a good twin twist. Mm-hmm. I love all of that. I am very much intrigued in the best friend blood versus water. So incorporating something like that, but
maybe they could finally do it.
I mean, maybe I would like to see it. What about you, Lancelot?
My hunch is that we would have already had another or maybe even two more Blood versus Water seasons in the past since San Juan del Sur. If it wasn't, my hunch is that it's extremely difficult to cast.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I think that production is like, well, let's put it on hold. We'll keep trying, but this is extremely difficult to cast. But I would say, yes, I expect there to be one in the future. And I would absolutely love to see more of it. I you could do it every season.
Yeah.
I think, and I would be okay with that.
They cast a really wide net in terms of the people that they reached out to. And I talked about on the podcast that I even got a call about Survivor Blood vs. Water. They had not told me yet that it was a Survivor Blood vs. Water, where that they were like, okay, we know Nicole would be great. They had just asked me about it, and Nicole was pregnant with Dominic, and I had said no. But it turns out they talked to probably, at least 100 survivors looking for people. And there was a lot of other people that were in the mix who went like pretty far from Judd from Guatemala was somebody, and Troyzan was also in the mix to come back to have another one world person potentially. And I think there's a few others. I think Sandra was close to coming back for this season.
Parvati and John almost made final cut. Maybe?
So I don't think that they were officially like an item at that point. I think that I remember talking to John Fincher, and he was saying that they were talking to him, but I don't think it was to come back with Parvati at that time.
And so it might have been Parvati and her dad then.
Perhaps, yes, separately, no. Because it also...
I just feel like I've heard a lot of rumors about that.
Yeah, it would have screwed things up also to have two survivors come back and play together, because you had a tribe of new players and a tribe of first-time players. So there were a lot of people that they ended up talking to about this.
Yeah, I think that there's enough crop of people that would do it again, especially if their loved one is there. It's also like giving an opportunity to your loved one to experience something that, you know, so many people say, like, you don't understand until you've been through it yourself. So, and then there's so many survivor families that, like, got brought up on Survivor, and this is, like, you know, a weekly event. So, like, to give that experience to a loved one as a survivor, I'm sure is, like, incredible. Mm-hmm.
According to the Survivor Wiki, which is not always accurate, they cite Ashley Underwood could not compete due to her partner and backup partner being unable to play. So that they were like really going to Ashley Underwood. Also, Mike Chisel supposedly was in the mix. So they really wanted to get some more Redemption Island in there. Remind me who Mike Chisel is. He was on Redemption Island, and he was one of the Zapateras.
Oh, that Mike. The one who got in a fight with Philip. Mm-hmm. Over their rice or something. Okay.
Yeah, I know. I think that was actually Steve. I think Mike was out of the game by that point. But
yeah, same. Oh, Mike the Marine?
Yeah, I think he was on.
Oh, okay.
How about this? It says that Lex was offered to play with his son, but he declined because he didn't want to play against a family member. Weak. Oh.
Yeah, that is weak.
No. I would love to. Just like my competitive edge, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I would love to play with any family member.
Now, where did you read that from? Because I see on the Survivor Wiki it says that Lex and Big Tom declined because they were working on the show Family Beef.
I'm on the Wikipedia.
Oh, okay.
The good old Wikipedia where anybody can say anything that they want.
He didn't want any family beef.
Yeah. Oh, well, beef, it's hard. Who else? Earl?
Well, there's always the reason you stay compared to the actual reason, right? I mean, who knows what? There could be a million different reasons why he said no.
Okay. Michael M wants to know, would any of the panelists want to play on a Blood versus Water season of Survivor? Sarah, it sounds like that you would.
Oh, absolutely. I would jump at it. I would love to. And it's not even because the nice reasons, I would love to have this shared experience with my loved one. No, I want to beat them. I want to send them home. Like, it sounds so much fun. Like, every single thing that pissed me off in my past, I would hold on to that grudge and be like, you're out. You're voted out. I would love it. I mean, that's the dream, to just have it. Just seems like so much fun.
Yeah. Lancelot?
I would absolutely do it on one where it's best friends or good friends or something like that. I would much rather do that one, because I feel like for me, that one would allow me to, I feel like I would, it would allow me to just play more like how I would want to play, and because I just wouldn't feel as indebted, I guess, to a friend who I brought out there. But I don't know. I would definitely do it though.
I'd vote out my mom happily. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you know how much she owes me in therapy bills? No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, I do think it would be a fun situation to do it. Like, if we were in sort of like the Tyson and Rachel position where, you know, we were together, Nicole and I, but like before we had children, like, I think it's like, okay, like, let's both go. Okay. We'll both be in the same place. Like, okay, this is like probably the ideal way to do Survivor. You'll know where I am. I'll know where you are, and this will be perfect. But I think then, like, on the other hand, then to have children and then to have us both go away to go do something like this, it would be, I think, pretty untenable to do it in that way. And I do feel like that it would be, you know, similar to sort of like some of the issues where Jeremy and Val, there was a lot of trash talk back and forth, and John and Jacqueline getting into arguments. It would be good TV, but I don't know how effective it would be as a pair.
Yeah, Yeah, but you know that Nicole would rock it. Nicole would rock Redemption Island.
She would do well in the challenges, for sure. Yeah. In terms of the social game, and then like not saying what comes to mind, I think she might struggle with that.
Yeah, that same thing with My Fiancé. He would just drag me down, and I don't have time for that. So,
no. I feel like Nicole would do really well if you could somehow erase the massive target that people would unfairly place on her due to her relationship to you.
You think that
you can't get?
Yeah,
I think she would do better without that target.
Okay, what if she played in the season without me, Lancelot?
No, I'm saying regardless of whether you're there or not.
No, I don't think anybody's going to think that. Oh, Nicole's a strategist. Like, she's married to Rob.
I firmly think people would believe that. I think people would say, "Here's a woman who's lived with Rob for how many years has heard more strategy talk than anybody else."
You think
as
she's
a result,
listening
right?
to any like, of this stuff?
No, but like people. I'm saying what people would think and what people what assumptions people would make. Am I?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that this is my opinion. I'm saying that's what their opinion.
Yeah, is. I hear what you're saying.
I would say like you know anybody who's a like a follower of RHAP would know the truth. Like Nicole would not be great at the strategy. Anyone who's a casual and doesn't know her wouldn't be bothered by Nicole. But the people that are like know of Rob would be like, oh, very, very dangerous. Yeah. But like, if you really know Nicole, then you know that she's not a strategic threat necessarily. physical threat, incredibly scary.
Maybe Big Brother might be better for her.
Okay. Maybe, yeah.
Jack from Texas asks, how does the season play out if Tyson draws the White Rock? So I feel like I've talked to Tyson many times over the years about this. And then Tyson goes to Redemption Island and feels like that he has a pretty good shot to get back in.
Do agree. I think that Tyson could get back in from Redemption Island.
Mm-hmm. What was the last challenge where that that Tina and Laura participated in? It was the same one.
It was the jars on the teeter totter.
Yeah, it was the same one as the getting back in from Redemption Island in season 22. So, yeah, I think Tyson would probably be just as good as anybody at that.
Yeah, I think that his leg strength. I think so. When you're standing there with one leg propped up and the other leg down, balancing a teeter totter with the jar on the end. I think that you're going to start feeling it most in your upper leg, which Tyson would, even having not ridden bicycles for how many years prior to Blood versus Water, I still think would have a major advantage there because his upper leg strength would have just been so, so good from all those years of cycling. But that's just my guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's somebody who would come back in from the edge of extinction in Survivor Winners at War, so I don't think that the pressure is going to get to him in that spot. So, I think he's got a pretty decent shot to get back into the game at that point. And so figure he goes out there, and then I guess somebody else gets voted out at five, probably Jervis. And I guess then he re-enters a game with Katie, Hayden, Sierra, him and Monica, and he might win the last two immunities like he did in the real world, and then ultimately like get to the final three with some version of like Sierra and Hayden.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting.
I think this question is also asking, this question kind of wants to know, you know, okay, you have five players left. Who of these five is going to win? And it's almost ignoring Redemption Island a little bit.
Yeah.
And so the question is like of Monica, Jervis, Katie, Sierra, and Hayden.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's say I think Jervis and Monica are probably done.
Yeah.
If the final three ends up being Katie, Sierra, and Hayden, who's the winner of the season?
I think Hayden wins.
Hayden, let's see. He's going to have certainly Caleb.
Yeah.
Who else is the big Hayden contingent?
I feel like Sierra has a pretty good shot at it, too.
Yeah. It really comes down to, like, what are Aris and Vetus want to do? Because Laura will vote for Sierra. Yeah. Tina will vote for Katie.
Aris might vote for Katie.
Yeah, you think the Aris and Vetus could then attack on... Katie's the winner of Survivor Blood versus Water?
As if.
I misspoke. I meant to say Vetus might vote for Katie, not Aris. I mixed the two up.
This matchmaking is not substantial enough for Katie win. I feel like I'm going to, you know, hold strong that I feel like Sierra would win in that situation over Hayden.
I actually think that Katie would get those votes because I think that, you know, Aris has his deal with Tina, that I think that Tina is going to say to him, like, hey, buddy, remember remember our deal? Like, vote for my daughter.
Yeah. No deal. Mm. No deal. A Katie win? Maybe we would have a different edit from, you know, the Survivor editors that Katie was making moves. But, you know,
I gotta imagine that the politicking on this one, with because of the fact that Sierra would have had a loved one on the jury, Hayden would not, but Katie would too. So two of the three have loved ones on the juries. I think the politicking would have been at very intense levels, and it could have been a very interesting vote for sure.
Okay. John Manson says, a lot of people talk about the season as one that got them back into Survivor. There was some magic with this season. Was it returning players? The new player, loved ones, Redemption Island actually working, a few exciting votes. So I don't know if I've ever heard that Redemption Island is a season that got a lot of people back into the show.
Redemption Island or Blood versus Water?
I'm sorry, this is Blood versus Water.
Okay.
I feel like I've heard that countless times with Samoa, but not with Blood versus Water. I think that for a modern season, kind of like what I said in the beginning, it was very people focused, which is like something that we don't get that much. We got to really know everybody. We already knew the returning players. We got to really know Todd Hanna, the loved ones, because they kept losing in the beginning. So I think that anytime you get a returning player season, there's an extra amount of excitement. And I think seeing like familial bonds and drama and all that good stuff adds for extra excitement, especially for someone like me that is really, really into social dynamics and the social part of the game.
Okay. This is an interesting question as to them doing another Blood versus Water. It's a long one, and it is from Jif Probst. Jif Probst says that Survivor Blood versus Water hasn't been done again because there is a major flaw in the game, which got discovered the second time people played. This may be because of the fact that three pairs can run the game if they want all the way down from the final 11. Jif Probst goes on to say, I remember hearing that in San Juan del Sur, there was an agreement between John and Jacqueline and Baylor and Missy and Natalie that they'd go to the end together, and Jacqueline and Baylor volunteered to fall on their swords in that scenario to let their finals go to the final three, which revealed a fairly game-breaking flaw unique to the Blood versus Water format. That's why Jif went on to say That's why Jif went off on that same group when they rigged the reward challenge, and why Natalie voted out Baylor instead of Missy. Great season, but it nearly could have been a huge dud if not for Natalie's quest for revenge against John. Is this a concern that a couple of pairs could just get together and then have people not necessarily fighting for a spot in the finals, knowing that their partner will get to the finals? Does that sound plausible?
I say play it out and then make rule changes accordingly, because while there was that possibility, I mean, who's to say that if you ran this say you did this theme four or five more times, we could watch this season five more times where that never happens. I understand what's being said, and that's a good point, but I wonder if it's easier said than done.
Yeah. I also feel like that even if you have three pairs, it's like, okay, we're going to go to the final six. Like, well, you know, somebody from those pairs is getting left out. So I don't know necessarily if you are making a scenario where, you know, everybody's going to like split the pot.
Yeah.
People make other relationships as well. It's never as easy as we're going to make it to the final six and that's it. There's always a crack. So, I think that it's like a good, like, you know, it's like a big block six people, but I don't think it's sustainable for the entire game.
Okay. And then Kevin says, I remember the season being met with a lot of criticism before it even aired. Is this the most overachieving season of all time? Lancelot, do you have any thoughts on what the perception of the season was before it started to where it ended?
I actually don't, because at that time, at the time this season aired, I was not currently watching Survivor. So I'm not really qualified to answer that. But so maybe Sarah can.
Yeah, Sarah, I do remember when this was announced. I remember people hated the idea of the twist. I remember people did not love this cast of like, what, really? Colton is back. Monica Culpepper. Rupert again. Like, I remember doing a podcast. I recorded it with Nicole, and it was like we were reacting to the cast and the news. And I remember it being like a lot of people just being very underwhelmed. Another season, half and half. Like, what is this? This is not Survivor. You get voted out. You can go back in with a loved one. Redemption Island is back. I feel like a lot of people were.
People hate Redemption Island.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that, you know, because the season before, Karamoan was half and half. So I think people were a little bit fatigued on the half and half seasons, especially because, well, I mean, you know, Cochran won and he was a returning player. So it's like, you know, it's kind of like the issue that we see a lot in these, you know, half and half seasons where the returning players win. They're usually the winners, and we see it again with Tyson winning. But I personally was excited about it. I think that people are always, you know, very disappointed when they see the cast announced. It's just, it is what it is. It doesn't matter. But there was, I think that it was ultimately a good cast. Maybe it was a little too mom heavy. Like, maybe I would have liked to see a little bit, you know,
is that a play on Kat from the finale?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
If you haven't noticed, the season is a little mom heavy.
It's a little mom heavy.
But you've altered the cast.
I had to step up my mom game a little bit.
And I'm Jeff here, still confused as to what you're saying.
Wait, I don't understand what's going on.
Oh my gosh. Like, what in the world? It was so awkward. But also, it's like,
it was more awkward than filet mignon pizza.
I mean, it might be the most awkward reunion moment of the history of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, Jeff's just like, okay, I gotta switch topics like right now. I gotta get this back on track.
Touche indeed. Okay. Was there anything else that either of you wanted to bring up about Survivor Blood versus Water?
For me, I just think that, actually, you know what?
What?
What are our thoughts? Because like, Tyson had his two idols and he played both idols, but he didn't necessarily play them correctly. Like, he did, like, he felt like he's in trouble. So some people would argue, like, if you feel like you're in trouble, play your idols, protect yourself. But technically, he didn't play them correctly. Lancelot, do you feel like that is like a hindrance to like Tyson being one of the top 10 winners?
Well, okay, so remind me how he played his first one. I know how he played his second one.
He played it on the vote that Caleb went out. So there were four votes for Caleb, three votes for Sierra, and he played his idol.
Yeah, and he thought
and he went back found it again immediately after playing it, right? Okay. So I think his biggest misstep with the idols was it's inexcusable that he didn't play his idol at final six when there was a high likelihood of a rock draw. He has to protect himself there. And I think that was a very bad error. It worked out. Did he get lucky? Yes. But just because the odds were in his favor, right? Just because he was a 66% favorite to draw a rock that would keep him in the game, that doesn't mean, like, some people don't understand sometimes that, like, if, like, let's say luck is in your favor. Let's say you have a 66% chance of something, and then that thing happens. You still got lucky, right? Luck was in your favor. You still got lucky. And I don't think that it was smart of him to withhold his idol at final six. That needed to be in play. But then when he played it at five, I'm not sure how it was played incorrectly because he had the immunity and it had to be played on somebody. So was he supposed to play it for Monica, or what are you saying?
I'm just saying that ultimately, like, he handed off to Jervis, and were there any there were votes on Jervis.
There were two votes on Jervis, but not enough to not enough to
because there were still more votes on Sierra. But I think both times is because he was weary of Monica, and Monica's was with him. Like no matter what, like, you know, she was like really, really with the two of them. So I don't know. I just thought food for thought.
I think he was justified in being wary of Monica. Like, I don't know that he was like, you know, having panic attacks about Monica, you know, going with somebody else. Like, I think he was felt mostly okay, but maybe had a little bit of doubt in his mind, which I think was perfectly justified based on what we saw. You know, like, Monica was seemed pretty solid, but could potentially flip. So I think he had an adequate level of worry towards Monica.
I also think playing the idol on Jervis is also, it's in front of the jury. It's sort of like, okay, you know, I'm in charge of Jervis here, everybody. I'll take care of him. Like, here, Jervis, this one's on me. Yeah. Play the idol. Yeah, you're safe tonight. So I think it's something that, you know, if you're trying to decide who's really running things, Jervis or Tyson, it helps, like, lean more in Tyson's direction. Lancelot, did you have anything else you wanted to add on Blood versus Water?
It just occurred to me, I was thinking about, I guess there's kind of a fun fact that people might be interested in knowing, and that's that. So this season was in the Philippines, right?
Yes.
Like Tyson's lived there for 2 years as a Mormon missionary, right? And maybe a lot of super fans or people who know Tyson might know that. But I think people who didn't know before might find that pretty interesting how Tyson was, you know, he lived there for 2 years, was familiar with the place. And then when he gets called to go play in that location, manages to win, was probably a really cool, like, full circle thing for him, you know, that many years later, going back to the Philippines and winning Survivor in a place that you'd, you know, lived in, like, probably 15
years ago, like, if I played in Survivor Oswego.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. If they have one up there, that'd be wild. Okay. Well, this was very fun to go back to Survivor Blood versus Water, and this was a great panel discussion to talk more about it. Anything else that we left out?
No, I think that AJ and Mary did a wonderful job. It was it was a great podcast. If you haven't listened to it, all 4 hours and 50 minutes, very extensive. So I thought that you guys did a great job on Wednesday.
Yeah. Lots of fun that we had on the 14th best season. We'll talk about the 13th best season of Survivor coming up. Be on the lookout for that on Tuesday night when I'll be with David Bloomberg and Mel Hulse to talk about Survivor Borneo. So we keep it going on Jervis Week here on the podcast. And we've seen Jervis eat the grubs in season 27 and Jervis eat the grubs in season 1. And also be on the lookout for David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis. We'll have a Why Tyson Won podcast coming this weekend as well. So one last podcast of our Survivor Blood versus Water coverage. All right, Lancelot, where can people keep up with you?
They can find me on Twitter. I'm not a prolific tweeter, but I am somewhat of a reply guy. I have a great time replying to the things people say. So if anybody wants their content to be replied to by me, feel free. It's
what about that as a season, Lancelot? Original tweeters versus reply guys.
I like it a lot, and I think that that's a fairly even competition because there are a lot of really good original tweeters out there who come up with some amazing jokes, but the reply guys are pretty good at it too. Because I know there are a few accounts I follow who are really, really good tweeters, always coming up with good original jokes, but also really good at in the replies. Mm-hmm. That's honestly
Three Tribes.
That's a top five baby season idea.
The retweeters often get the most likes, and I feel as though that could hold some major contention as a third tribe.
Yeah, okay. I think there's a lot of good metaphors waiting to happen at Tribal Council on this, so be on the lookout for that, the next social media season of Survivor. Sarah, I know that it's busy day for you because you are going off to go host the RHAP Clubhouse Pop Culture this week.
Yes, yeah, it's a busy week. I mean, we got to discuss Britney this is like our leading story.
Yes.
I think. So very excited. You can find me on Clubhouse at Sarah Ferguson. You can also find me on Twitter at Sarah Ferguson. I also do a podcast with Jess Sterling. SHIT 90 shows taught me. Shite 90 shows taught me. We cover Big Brother. We don't cover Big Brother.
Big Brother.
I have Big Brother on the mind, Boy Meets World, and Dawson's Creek.
Yes.
And we also do like 90s content. We're doing Matilda in July.
Okay.
Not Big Brother, though.
All right. Well, we'll see. Maybe we'll switch gears. Maybe Big Brother will be so good. You're like, all right, you know, we have to talk about this Big Brother 23.
I don't
it's so
think
good.
So. It's I so really, good. Really don't think so.
Okay.
There's not much hope
you never
for
know.
Us, I think.
You never know. Okay, of course, we're very excited about Big Brother. We announced yesterday that we have two new Big Brother shows coming to the Patreon podcast feed. So if you are a patron of Rob's podcast, listening to this podcast, expect some more Big Brother content coming your way as the slop moves to the Patreon podcast feed. And then we're going to start doing a new patron feedback show where you can call in and ask questions to Taryn every week on Friday. So we're looking forward to that as well. Hope everybody in Canada had a great Canada Day. Hope everybody in the U.S. has a great 4th of July weekend. And we'll be back with more Survivor coming up on Tuesday night. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. Support for this podcast comes from our friends over at Geico. Do you want to rent your home? Sure you do, and it's hard work, but you know it's easy bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too. You're busy enough. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today.